Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 15th, 2021. We'll start today's reading on the front page with pot question off ballot. Board upholds an objection to cannabis sales referendum. Decatur, an advisory referendum on marijuana sales in Decatur, will no longer be included on the April ballot. On Thursday, the Municipal Officers Electoral Board upheld an objection to the referendum appearing on the April 6th ballot, determining the petition didn't meet the minimum requirement of 1,949 signatures, or 8% of the population that voted in the last April election. The referendum would have asked voters, should the city of Decatur allow the sale of recreational cannabis and cannabis-infused products to adults 21 and older? Gerald Stocks, who filed the objection on January 8th, said the petition for referendum failed to meet other Illinois election code standards, citing signatures coming from non-Decatur residents, incomplete voter information, and structural inconsistency regarding the heading on several pages of the petition. Petitioner Lisa Kendall and her legal counsel, Samuel Kahneman, requested the board lower the required amount of signatures needed due to the difficulty posed to the collection process by restrictions and health concerns relating to the COVID-19 pandemic. The request was denied. Kendall told the board that a personal autoimmune condition, making her more at risk for contracting COVID, and the increase in positive cases in Macon County had hindered her ability to get the signatures. The last signature was collected on December 19, 2019, she said. We had hoped that by the summer, by May and June, based on what the initial certain news estimates were talking about, that we would be able to get out a few months after the quarantine started and start gathering petition signatures again, Kendall said. Stocks argued that no effort was made to collect signatures since December 2019 and no legal restrictions prevented further circulation of the petition, as federal law prohibits a governor's executive order from limiting election activity. Those anticipated to help gather signatures were in the dozens, Kendall said, but I'm not willing to risk the public health and safety of our advocates and activists. It was also pointed out the petitioner had twice brought a request to lower the number of required signatures before a federal judge, which were both denied, one being a federal relief court under an order from May 2020. Kahneman said the current COVID positivity rate in Macon County has grown significantly since then and would probably have a different result if brought before a federal judge once more. The petitioner's counsel showed the highest positivity rate in the county occurred in November. Arguing in support of the board lowering the number of required signatures, Kahneman referenced an Idaho case where they were reduced the number of signatures required in a petition referendum case. Stock's response was the board shouldn't rewrite the election code. Stock said his ultimate goal in filing the objection is preservation of the election process. I'm not here because I think consumers of cannabis are evil or malevolent or it's some kind of grand mischief. Rather, I'm somewhat far more of a libertarian than most people in this community, Stock said Thursday. But the election code has to be followed, he said. The Decatur City Council in October voted against allowing recreational cannabis sales in the community. Council members at the time raised concerns about the impact on young people and other issues. Community members in favor of cannabis sales in Decatur used the hearing Thursday to share their thoughts. We are moving the direction that we should be in this county. The majority of people in Decatur Township voted and said that they wanted to have legal cannabis sales here, said Cameron Williams, a 27-year-old from Decatur. Let the people's voice be heard, he said. Williams was making reference to an advisory referendum in March to allow recreational cannabis sales in Decatur Township that passed by a sizable margin. During that same election, voters in Maroa also approved a similar measure, while the proposition failed in Blue Mound and Warrensburg. David Willauer, 80, doesn't think allowing cannabis sales in Decatur is a good idea and expressed opposition to the referendum being placed on the April's ballot. All government bodies need money, but we don't need that money, said Willauer. It's going to cost us more in the end than it's going to gain. Look at all these states that have legalized. They have nothing but welfare costs, and it just continues to grow, he said. And the picture on page 2 that accompanies this shows Gerald Stocks. I'm not here because I think consumers of cannabis are evil or malevolent or it's some kind of mischief, he said. And he filed the objection to the ballot question. But the election code has to be followed. And the photo on page 1... shows Mr. Stocks presenting his evidence supporting his opposition to an advisory referendum seeking public opinion on the sale of recreational cannabis in Decatur during a meeting Thursday of the Municipal Officers Electoral Board. And it's people in a large theater with masks and at separate tables. His objection was upheld. And the other photo shows Samuel Kahneman via Zoom, I think, speaking on behalf of Lisa R. Kendall, who filed the petitions, seeking to have the advisory question on the April ballot. It's him on a screen and a councilperson sitting at a table in front of the screen. COVID, local and state. Macon County sees heavy demand for vaccine. Decatur. Demand for the COVID-19 vaccine is so high in Macon County that the phone system was overwhelmed and all available appointments were filled within 24 hours of the health department announcing its move to the next phase of the vaccinations, officials said Thursday. The phone system was basically locked up due to the extremely high numbers of calls. Health Administrator Brandy Binkley said, responding to complaints circulating that people were having a difficult time getting through. Binkley said her staff will return calls as soon as possible to those who were able to leave a message. Those who left a message are asked not to call again. We ask the public to be patient and remind them this will not be the only opportunity to be vaccinated, Binkley said. More clinics will be held on an ongoing basis as we receive the vaccine. On Wednesday, the health department announced it was scheduling phase 1B COVID-19 vaccine appointments. This phase covers, among others, education workers, food and agriculture, manufacturing, corrections, public transit, shelters, postal services, grocery stores, and anyone 65 and older. Phase 1A of the vaccine distribution was earmarked for healthcare workers and the residents and staff of long-term care facilities. In the news release issued Thursday, officials said they would notify the public via media outlets and its Facebook page when more appointments are available. We want to be very clear that vaccine administration will be taking place over the course of several months as we work incredibly hard to vaccinate every eligible person who wishes to receive it, officials stated. We will hold clinics on a regular basis, and our community partners will also be announcing clinics as they plan them. We will continue to work with community partners to hold clinics and vaccinate eligible individuals as quickly as we can. Local health officials also announced Thursday that a woman in her 80s passed away from COVID-19. The death brings Macon County's total to 165 since the pandemic began. They also reported 72 new positive cases, bringing the county's total to 8,738. Meanwhile, the statewide 7-day rolling COVID-19 case positivity rate decreased slightly on Thursday to 6.8%, remaining below 8% for a sixth consecutive day. The rate dropped from 7.3% the day prior. The Illinois Department of Public Health on Thursday reported 6,652 new confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 in the state, with an additional 88 deaths. The state has reported 1,052,682 cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic began and 17,928 deaths across the state's 102 counties. On page A3, brothers and sisters on other side of fence. Illinois National Guard departs for Biden inauguration. Peoria, Tech Sergeant Jacob Mushin and Airman Bridget Wood didn't know where they would sleep Thursday night. They didn't know where they would land their plane or what their orders were. They don't even know when they'll return to Illinois. But they did know that they are among 200 Illinois National Guardsmen deploying in what their leaders called a historic mission to secure the U.S. Capitol for the inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th President of the United States. "It's an honor to wear this uniform," said Wood. Mushin, 29 of Peoria, and Wood, 20 of Morton, are two of 18 members of the Illinois National Guard's 182nd Airlift Wing Security Forces, based in Peoria, who left Thursday morning to provide security at the U.S. Capitol on Inauguration Day. They will join more than 20,000 National Guard members securing Capitol Hill ahead of concerns for potential violence following the January 6 storming of the U.S. Capitol. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday activated around 200 Illinois Guardsmen to provide additional security on Inauguration Day. That includes security forces from the 183rd Wing, based in Springfield, and the 126th Air Refueling Wing, based at Scott Air Force Base, and around 100 military police soldiers with the 494th Maneuver Enhancement Brigade's 33rd Military Police Battalion. "We're going in there prepared for anything that might come," said Mushin, who is also a criminal analyst with the Peoria Police Department. "I'm very excited to support this mission. It has been an unprecedented year for guard operations for the 182nd Airlift Wing," officials with the wing said Thursday. The state called on the Guard, many of whom are students and civilian workers, for help on multiple occasions over the past year. In March, 43 Guard members assisted in the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Members of the Security Force unit were activated over the summer to help support the Peoria Police Department during the civil disobedience mission. Wood, a freshman at Illinois State University studying business and marketing, was in her first week of online classes when she learned she would be sent to Washington. Without any idea when she will return to normal, Wood will have to keep up with her studies from wherever she is based. "I'm going to try my best," she said Thursday morning. "It definitely is kind of stressful." Mushin, who has served in the National Guard for 9 years, In that time, he's been deployed to Afghanistan, where he was stationed for around 10 months, and has helped on several other missions. Though both he and Wood are nervous for the coming days, he said, "We prepare for this not just a few days before, but all year. The goal of the mission is to provide support and to keep any protests as peaceful as possible," he said. "Use of force is contingent on the situation," but he said the Guard doesn't want to use any force at all. "When you're deployed to the Middle East, we're at war," said Mushin, which he said is different from their mission in Washington, where the people on the other side of the fence are Americans. "They are our brothers and sisters," he said. And this photo on the small photo shows the Illinois National Guard 186th Second, airlift wing maintenance workers loading three pallets of supplies and equipment onto a C-130 transport plane Thursday as the first of some 200 Illinois Guardsmen deploy to Washington, D.C. to prepare for the presidential inauguration. And the larger photo shows Airman Bridget Wood, 20. She's in the right of the picture, an Illinois State University freshman from Morton, and Tech Sergeant Jacob Mushin, 29, of Peoria, a crime analyst with the Peoria Police Department. They load onto the C-130 National Guard transport plane Thursday as they deploy to Washington, D.C. to provide security for the presidential inauguration. And she has her boot on the first step getting into the plane. Christopher and Banks files for bankruptcy. Christopher and Banks is the latest retailer to file for bankruptcy, and it may be going out of business. The women's apparel chain, which has a store at the Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth, said Thursday it filed voluntary petitions for Chapter 11 in U.S. bankruptcy court for the District of New Jersey. Christopher & Banks said it has launched a store closing and liquidation process as it is in active discussion with potential buyers and expects to close a large portion, if not all, of its stores. The chain also has stores in 22 other Illinois communities, including Bloomington, Champaign, Effingham, Mattoon, Peoria, Springfield, and Danville. And in brief, Decatur Public Library reopening to the public. The Decatur Public Library will open for in-person services on Tuesday, January 19th. Hours will be 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Friday, closed Saturday and Sunday. The library will be closed on Monday, January 18th to honor Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Virtual programs and meetings will continue to be offered. Curbside pickup will still be available. There will be no seating in the public areas. The history room will remain closed. Masks and social distancing will be required. Decatur Family YMCA hosting blood drive Tuesday. The Decatur Family YMCA at 220 West McKinley Avenue is hosting a community blood drive on Tuesday, January 19th. It will be held from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Donors will receive a voucher for a $5 gift card or a free St. Patrick's Day themed t-shirt. Donors must be older than 17, weigh more than 110 pounds. Photo identification is required. Contact the Blood Center at 217-367-2202. That's 367-2202, or visit www.bloodcenter.org. That's bloodcenter, all one word, .org. Code number 60739. Again, that's 60739. Appointments required. Tree and bridge inspection work will disrupt traffic. Decatur bridge inspection work will cause some lane closures Tuesday, January 19th, along Garfield Avenue, the city's Public Works Department has announced. Beginning at 7:30 a.m., weather permitting, inspection work will commence on the Garfield Avenue Bridge on East Garfield Avenue and North 22nd Street. The work is due to be completed by 3 p.m. that day and will cause the closure of two outside lanes of 22nd Street at the bridge. The closure will shift to the middle lanes being shut down once work on the outside lanes is finished. Conservation District offers free programs through January. Decatur virtual programs by the Macon County Conservation District are scheduled to run throughout the month of January. The sixth programs are free of charge for all ages and will cover wildlife and astronomy via live stream on the Conservation District's Facebook page. No registration is required. Another free January event, Restoring Homestead Prairie Preservation will be held at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, January 28th via Zoom. The presentation will show how staff and volunteers preserved the homestead and turned it into a museum. Registration is required by noon on Wednesday, January 27th, and a Zoom link will be emailed to those who signed up. Decatur woman denies charges of felony theft. The Decatur woman prosecutors accuse of being a for-profit version of Robin Hood, using stolen money to pay the utility bills of poor families, but charging them for her services, is pleading not guilty to multiple counts of felony theft. Crystal L. Richardson, 38, told Macon County Circuit Court Judge Phoebe Bowers she denied three charges alleging she looted close to $4,000 from the bank account of the Northeast Community Fund, a charity working to assist families in need. Richardson appeared in court January 6th with defense attorney David Ellison and waived a preliminary hearing to see if there was probable cause to try her. Bowers scheduled her case for a pretrial hearing January 28th, and Richardson remains held in the Macon County Jail with bail set at $75,000, meaning that she must post $7,500 to bond out. In the meantime, police continue to hunt a man described as her partner in crime, who went by the online name King Burino, and is accused of working for fee for payment scheme with her and advertising their services on Facebook. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police quotes Detective Ben Massey as describing the man, quotes, and to be associated with at least $13,158 in fraudulent transactions, end quote. But as investigations continue, the total amount of stolen money from Northeast Community Fund accounts appears to be far larger. The affidavit said on an audit had identified more than $145,000 worth of cash siphoned off by fraud up to November of 2020. Richardson had been arrested on December 3rd. The money was looted using online transactions, police say, obtained through fraud, using banking and routing information from Northeast Community Fund checks. The fund is quoted as telling police it does issue checks directly to poor people in need of urgent help. The affidavit cites several examples of Richardson stepping in to pay utility bills for clients who recruited her services. One customer described how Richardson came to his house to take care of his $655 water bill. The customer said she, Richardson, explained she was helping people pay their water or power bills, the affidavit said. The customer said she was just asking for a little off the top. He would explain that if someone would need $1,000 from Crystal for a bill, they would have to pay her $400. He advised he ended up giving Crystal a total of $150 cash for her to pay his water bill. He said Crystal paid the water bill over the phone while at his house. Police said Richardson's system did not work particularly smoothly, however. They cite several instances where payments were made and then returned. One woman who had her $240 power bill paid checked her Ameren, Illinois account and found that she suddenly had a $3,000 credit. The customer said that she knew something wasn't right and ended up contacting Ameren, the affidavit said. She said she was told the payment had been reversed and she now owed Ameren $510. Angel Lawrence, the executive director of the Northeast Community Fund, told the Herald and Review Thursday that all stolen monies had been recovered thanks to prompt action having been taken and the work of the police department. All of it has come back, every single red cent, said Lawrence, and we're doing good work here. We're doing God's work, and we want our donors to know their money is safe with us. Absolutely. Lawrence said stringent new security protocols were now in place to further safeguard the fund's accounts. Decatur police chief says justice bill is bad for state. Disgusted by the passage of a new criminal justice and police reform bill by Springfield lawmakers, Decatur police chief Jim Getz accused politicians of scapegoating law enforcement for problems legislators don't want to fix. House Bill 3653 creates a task force to explore issues like making it easier to sue police officers and will end cash bail in Illinois by 2023. Governor J.B. Pritzker has already indicated he will sign it. Getz said Thursday that reexamining police legal protections and smoothing the way for violent criminals to be released isn't going to help drain a rising tide of violent crime. He said there is scope for bail reform, but lawmakers need to consult police before just charging ahead, regardless. Getz also accused lawmakers of being unwilling to take a hard look at the roots of crime and said that the majority of the violence his officers confront is what he calls black-on-black crime, police and African-American neighborhoods being shot, wounded or killed by assailants who are also black. Getz said facing the causes of deep societal problems that cause such crime and making the kind of investment needed to do something about it isn't a popular subject with politicians. The chief said that is why none of the legislators pushing the bill through the legislature came in advance to seek police opinions on what they proposed. They don't want to know the truth, he said. I think they want to hide behind legislation instead, he added. They don't want to know what the root causes of crime are because they don't want to fix the problem. The root causes, the chief said. It's easier to pick on the police and say that police are at fault. And when crime rises because of this bill, they will blame that on the police as well, he said. Getz said many of the lawmakers who voted for HB 3653 could have no idea what most of it said. He said the state Senate received it at 3 a.m. and had passed it, all 700 pages of it, by 4 a.m. He said even lawmakers like State Representative Sue Sheard, Democrat of Decatur, who was aware of law enforcement's objections, chose to vote for the party line anyway. We will continue to do our jobs and we will continue to protect our citizens, Getz added. But when things get worse, voters need to reach out to the politicians who voted for this. Final Senate passage of what's known as the Criminal Justice Reform Omnibus Bill came after a grueling 20 hours of politicking during Tuesday's lame duck session. The House followed suit Wednesday morning, clearing the way for the bill to head to the governor. The legislation is made up of several provisions that touch all facets of the criminal justice system. The Pretrial Fairness Act, a longtime passion project to end cash bail in Illinois by Senator Robert Peters, a Democrat of Chicago, and a complete overhaul of police certification crafted by Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, were absorbed into the omnibus package. The legislation, an initiative of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus, was tied to a new amendment to House Bill 3653, introduced in the early morning hours Wednesday following mostly private negotiations that stripped down many controversial provisions in the bill. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 15th, 2021. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned. We'll finish this article in the second half hour.